Welcome to the New Reality Show, where you can call in live for laser coaching and engage in Q&A with Drs. Art Emmerich and Christina Winzi. Discover how to master the power of your mind, body, and spiritual energies. Get empowered to create your new reality for more happiness, well-being, and success. Well, hello, Dr. Art.
Hello, Dr. Chris. How are you tonight?
I am great. How are you?
Very well. I'm hoping all the people out in radio TV land are also doing well. And thank you for joining in.
Yes, indeed. We are so happy to be here again on another Friday night. And we are... The New Reality Solutions Show, if you are new to our show, we started this show in July of last year.
Yeah.
We were very concerned about the state of emotional well-being or lack of a lot of people because of how the last 2 years have been. And we decided that we wanted to be able to help a lot more people than just one-on-one in our offices. And so we are offering all kinds of topics and solutions that's called New Reality Solutions to help you cope with the anxiety, the fear, the stress, all different kinds of topics of ways that people need some support. And we offer lots of free things that you can do at home. We have handouts and we have great guests and topics. And sometimes it's just the two of us. So
we made a promise that in our shows, we would give you topical material on whatever the subject was for that night, but also that we would give at least a couple of tips of something that you could do right away to improve the quality of your life. So there's some practical application that you get from our show, in addition to the information about what's going on, how things work and things like that.
Exactly. A couple things I want to say is thank you to our subscribers who are so faithful.
Yes.
And we always welcome new subscribers. If you get value from the show, if you like us, you want to see more of us and you want more people to see more of us, we always appreciate subscribers. There's a link on our homepage that you can find, and Thomas is showing it to you right there. And if you care to support us, we are always grateful for subscriber support. The other thing is that this is a call-in show, and if you'd like to join the conversation, if you have a question, if you would like some laser coaching right on the air, we are happy to provide that. So you can call us direct if you're in the United States, and it's going on the screen if you're watching, 1-888-627-6008. And if you are outside the U.S., you would dial direct 1-323-744-4831. So we are so happy that you are joining us tonight. And I think that's all the housekeeping, Dr. Art.
Well, if you want to call in with a problem and it's embarrassing, just say I'm calling for a friend. You know, you can do that. You don't have to reveal anything.
It's true. You can be anonymous because you're just calling in. Nobody's going to see your face. Nobody needs to know your name. So you can give a fake name and we're happy to help. So, you know, every week, I look forward to this every week. Dr. Mm-hmm. Art has a tip of the week with his sage wisdom. So take it away, Dr. Art.
Okay, this is going to be a little bit more complex one than usually, in that it has five parts to it. But the subject always have a one word topic for the tip of the week. And this week's topic subject is time. I know a lot of people will say, I can't do a lot of the important things that I want to do because I just don't have enough time. My plate's full and there's no room for anything else, that type of thing. So I want to give you a very powerful time management tool that you can use pretty quick. Would involve probably a piece of paper and a pencil just to make some notes on the things I'm going to ask you to do. The first thing you can do is stop. If you stop doing something that is need to move that down a little bit, if you would, so we can see the star. There we go. Oh,
where's
star
the
didn't
star?
Show up. Disappeared. Well, anyway, so the first thing you can do is stop doing some of the things you're doing that are not really contributing as much as you had hoped or that you wanted them to. You have some experience with that. There are some nuisance things. There are some trivial things. There are some urgent things that are not really that important, and you can just stop doing those. So that's the first step. Step two is with the room that you've created in your schedule, you can start doing some of the things that you would prefer doing or that would give you more value. The third item is that you can do less of some of the things that you're already doing that you think are important, but maybe you're just going too much perfection, too much detail. You can do less of those, which creates room for you to do more, which is the fourth item. You can do more of some of the things that you really need or wanted to do more of. And then the fifth thing is with whatever that's left, do them better. So that's more of a quality improvement kind of a thing of how you use your time. So the five areas are stop, then start, less, then more, and finally better. So we do have a handout if you'd like to have that. It has a blue star on it with each one of the points labeled, and then a little bit of an explanation about what each one of those points is.
Do you have the star in your possession right now, Dr. Art, the doctor?
I do. Uh-huh.
Can you hold it up to the screen and see if it'll show itself?
Oh, maybe we could do that. Yeah.
Yeah. For some reason, the format that that Thomas has isn't working so well. Okay.
Let's see if I can get that up there.
A little bit. So the first thing is to stop doing some of the things that you don't need to be doing too much of.
Right. That's the red one there on the.
Okay. The next one is to start doing more of what?
Start doing some of the things that you haven't been able to do because you didn't have any time.
Okay.
So you can just start doing some things that you'd always wanted to do and think, oh, if I ever had time, I'm going to do that. Well, now you've got a little bit of time.
Okay. And then do less of things that are wasting your time.
Right. Or things that you've maybe gone overboard and done a little bit too much emphasis on.
Okay.
You can do less of some of the things that aren't as important. It allows you to do more of some of the other ones. And then finally at the top, do it better. Do whatever's left. Is there some way you can do it better than you're doing right now? So anyway, I'd be glad to send you that handout. And it's very powerful. It will create instant space in your schedule and give you some room to be doing some other things that you had always wanted to do with your time. Very,
awesome.
Very powerful way to, a time management tool.
Well, you know, and what I find is that it's really important periodically to look at the processes and procedures that that you're doing, because there might be a much quicker way for you to accomplish the thing that you're doing. Sure. And also sometimes when you're busy, you think you're accomplishing, but you're really just being busy.
Yeah.
So,
and
yeah.
One of the notes at the bottom, which I'll give away one of the real key things about it is always work on effectiveness first. Do the right thing. Then work on efficiency as doing the thing right. Because it's really not good to get real efficient at doing something that doesn't even need to be done.
That so makes a lot of sense.
Make sure you look at the important effectiveness stuff, something that makes you effective, and work on that and not start working on efficiency, doing it the right way until after you've done the whole the whole star model, then you can start working on efficiencies. That's the better part.
Do it better. Yes. Well, I was going to say something about time management that I think is important. And it flew out of my brain. Yeah. If you want a copy of the handout, you can email us at contactnrshow@gmail.com. And at the end of the show, we're going to show our email to you so you can get that handout. We have other handouts. You know, if you listen to any of the archive shows, you can also ask us for some of the handouts from other shows where we've provided a lot of really cool solutions to help people with different things. So anyway, we had a guest tonight, but something happened and he could not make it. And we're not sure what, and we haven't been able to get a hold of him. So we're just hoping that everything's okay. And, you know, these things happen. So it's just the two of us tonight, Dr. Art.
Oh, my goodness. We never have anything to talk about.
That's from the two of us that could talk forever, right?
Right.
So, you know, we were talking earlier about handling grief, and I actually think that is a very timely topic. I think it people are going through a lot of grief these days. People have lost loved ones due to all that's been going on in health and issues around the world. We've got a war going on that. There's so much loss and so much devastation that people are dealing with. And I think even though we don't have anything planned here tonight, I think between the two of us that we can actually offer some really good solutions. Not the least of which is NLP ways of one of the things that comes to mind is I know that I'm very affected by visuals, and I think the majority of people are. And my favorite NLP technique, when I have a visual that I've seen that upsets me, I use NLP to do a process that is a way to decrease the emotional charge on the visual. And what we find in the brain is that when you make a visual colorful and bright and large, and sometimes if you can add video to it, it makes the emotions expand. It makes it more intense. And whether that's good or whether that's bad, you can intensify the emotions. And when we're doing helpful things for people, we have them amplify the visual for good, for something they want to increase. But when you want to decrease the emotional charge on a visual, let's say you're watching the news and you see an awful picture of somebody that's been shot, or, you know, sometimes you don't mean to be watching these things. They just come on the TV or they're on your social media, and it's a horrific thing that you can't get it out of your mind. And so that's when you want to treat your brain to decrease the emotions, where you shrink the picture. You want to make it black and white, and you want to make it the borders between the different objects within the picture to be all running together. So it's a combination of shrinking it down, making it black and white to gray, and everything kind of running together until it's the size of a postage stamp. And once you get it down to the size of a postage stamp, you can actually imagine that you're putting it behind you. You can imagine you're throwing it off onto a mountain. You can do something that takes it out of your visual range, even as the postage stamp. And what you will find is that it lessens the degree of intensity of that emotion. So that's one of the things I use a lot with clients. What about you, Dr. Art?
One of the things that I've learned is that emotions are things that we feel, is in the kinesthetic sense. And one of the things about grief is that emotions are usually attached to things, either events or people. And so let's say there is a death of a loved one or loss of a pet or whatever it might be. That occurs at a point in time. And when we say people are grieving, that's usually after the fact. They are dealing with the sense of loss of whatever it might be. So one of the things that I've found out is that we can bring those negative emotions of grief. I call them negative because they can really mess up our life today. And maybe it's something that happened 10 years ago. So the way we grieve ourselves in the present is that we have to go back in time. Our conscious mind's a great time traveler. We can go back and remember something that happened, the causation, and it has the grief emotion attached to it. And our problem is that when we come back to the present after reliving that event, we bring that negative emotion with us. And that's not necessary to do. That emotion belongs where it occurred back in the past. And so one of the things that we can do, and I have a hypnotic technique where I say wear a Teflon suit, but you can do that in your imagination. Just pretend like if you're going to go back to the event that you know it causes you to feel grief, pretend like you're putting on a wetsuit, just like a Teflon suit. You step into it, pull it up, put your arms in, zip it all the way up the front, pull the hood up over your head, and pull that down where only your face shows. Put on your gloves and your booties if you have those. And that now you're ready to time travel. And you go back and you perceive the event because for some reason you wanted to revisit that. And you will feel the emotion. It'll probably be somewhat subdued because of the wetsuit you've got on. But these emotions are kind of like sand spurs and they like Velcro. They want to stick to you so that they can hitch a ride back to the present where they don't really belong. And with your Teflon suit, they slide off and they can't. So when you get back to after your visit to the and you're back in the present, just very carefully take off your Teflon suit, shake it out, hang it on the line for the next time you want to time travel into the past where there may be some other negative emotions lurking around. But when you feel an emotion about something that happened in the past, you have gone through an elaborate process to make that happen. You have to remember the event. You know it's negative. You go back there anyway. You re-experience the emotion, and then you come back without cleaning all those things off and bring it back. And now you've got this emotion detached from what it was originally caused by. And now it's messing up your present where it really shouldn't be able to do that. You shouldn't allow it to do that. Mm-hmm. So that's just a way to protect yourself when you're doing this time traveling. Wear your Teflon suit. Don't bring that junk back into the present because it doesn't belong here.
Wow. Yeah. You know, that's the thing is the only thing we have control over is our present moment. Mm-hmm. People think that by going over and over in their minds about a past thing is actually somehow they're going to fix it. They get kind of stuck. And the problem is, as you said, they're taking a past emotion and reliving it over and over again and just hurting themselves in the present.
And let me say that used to be a therapeutic intervention. It was called extinguishing. And so they would say, okay, you feel this emotion, 1 to 100, how strong is it? And so, okay, well, it's 95, you know? And so they'd say, okay, I want you to relive that event and now relive it again and again and again and again. Well, the thought was there was kind of an exhaustion principle that eventually you would get so numb to that situation that you just wouldn't feel anything anymore. And that would be a good way to get rid of it. Turns out that wasn't really good, because some people started off at 95 and wound up at 195, you know. So we learn about interventions that we think, oh boy, this is going to be great. And then it turns out, well, no, that wasn't great at all. But we're always experimenting with something called reframing, which I'm also very interested in. I think, Dr. Chris, you mentioned that you can reframe something. That means that's based on the idea that there is no meaning in anything, any event, any person, any place. It means nothing other than the meaning you ascribe to it. So the meaning comes from here. Now, it's not out there in the thing or in the person or in the event. We attribute meaning. And so luckily for us, we don't have to erase the event, but we can certainly change what it means to us. And sometimes those very tragic things that we remember can be reframed into something much better. You hear people say, well, I know you've lost Aunt Susie, but she's in a better place now. Well, that's an effort to reframe the loss into seeing how much better it is for the departed person. You know, they're in a better place. And so you should be happy for them. You should be glad that they're out of pain now, or whatever the problem might have been to begin with. But just remember that meaning is coming from you. It's not in any event or any person or any place or anything. It's something that you ascribe to it. And therefore, it's amenable to being shifted in some way, you know, transformed into from something not so good into something much easier to accept and maybe even feel good about.
Mm. Well, you know, I think easier said than done when it comes to losing a loved one.
Absolutely.
So when we're dealing with grief, I think there are some acknowledgments. First of all, I think we should eliminate the word should in our vocabulary.
Right.
We used to have a phrase among some of the coaches I used to have a group with, and we'd say, stop shooting on yourself.
Yeah.
Because I think what people go through with loss, whether it's losing a job, whether it's losing a loved one, whether it's losing a house, losing whatever it is, there's this, well, I should be over this. I should not feel bad about this. People can even guilt you into not feeling your
Absolutely.
Feelings.
Yeah.
And so I think the first most important thing when dealing with grief is to be honest about how much pain you're actually in and to allow that. But there also, you know, there has to be a willingness to come out of it when you're ready. If you're not willing to come out of it, you'll just stay with the grief for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And nobody can really tell you when you're ready. Nobody can really.
Yeah, a lot of people grieve for years and years, and some people grieve for the rest of their lives over an event that may have happened 20, 30 years earlier.
Yeah.
And they stay in that grief. So let me just give you an example of reframing that I think it helps to explain it. There was a woman who was slowly losing contact with her family. First, her kids didn't want to have anything to do with her. Then her husband started talking about leaving and finally did leave. And she could not understand what the problem was. And so she saw a counselor and a coach and told him about the thing. And so the coach came to the house, and as he walked in, he noticed that all of the shag carpet was leaning in the same direction. It was beautiful. Everything was clean and it was all looked like it had been raked or something, you know, and he said, "My goodness, your floor is so wonderful." And she said, "Yes, I work real hard to keep it that way. I have a special vacuum that I use, and I make sure that I have it all pointed the same direction." And one of the things that my family used to do that would really irritate me, they'd come in the front door and they'd walk all through the house and they were trampling down my carpet and leaving footprints all over it. And I just spent hours getting it all straight. And I would really glide into them and say, "Don't walk on the carpet, you know, go walk over here on the side. I put this little mat out." And finally they just said, "You know, you're making too big a deal over this carpet, you know." And when one by one they decided that it wasn't worth the hassle of being with her. And so this coach, brilliant guy, wasn't me, but I aspire to that. He said, "Well, you know, you see that as you messed up my carpet. But what if it means that you're surrounded by people who love you? And the way you know is because you can see their footprints on the carpet." And the woman went, you know, she'd never even thought of it that way. She said, "Oh my goodness, I know what I drove my family away because I was protecting my carpet. What a stupid thing that was." So she called them all back in and apologized and said, "I know what I was doing. I'm not going to do that anymore. I would be happy for you to come in and she didn't say trample, but I'm sure that's what she meant. And walk on my freshly prepared carpet because I will feel good about that now instead of feeling angry about it." And it really changed the whole relationship with her family over that. So same event, different meaning. She just had somebody help her see, oh, it might mean something other than that.
Yeah, that's I love that story. And I have heard you tell it before. Yeah.
It's a favorite because it's so easy to see what was going on.
And it applies to so many situations. You know, what I believe is that we're all driven by either fear or love. And really, primarily, we all just want to be loved. And love is really the major driving force, even when people do things that aren't so great, the motivation behind it. And, you know, when I was learning about parenting, when my kids were little, learning about the fact that kids always have a motivation of a reason why they're doing something, acting out, because they don't have the words. They can't really express what it is that they want. So they will sometimes do bad behaviors to get attention, because their true desire is to get love. And I think that, you know, when we suffer loss, a lot of the time it's because there's this feeling that we can't replace or can't ever get back to a feeling of wholeness. And especially when you lose a loved one, that you know, people are irreplaceable. This is not to say that you can replace someone that you love that you lost, but it's to say that you can get back to wholeness. You can get back to wellness. You can get back to a sense of purpose. And you were talking earlier about how people can be in grief for years. Mm-hmm. And what I think is sometimes there does need to be a sort of intervention, because or maybe people can come to this conclusion themselves. But if you're holding on to grief and it's preventing you from having the life that you really want, if you're saying, "Well, I can't grow this business because I'm still mourning over what happened 20 years ago when my business tanked," or I can't fall in love again because this person hurt me. Mm-hmm. And I'm still, I've never gotten over the fact that this person hurt me. So, you know, what is it you really want is the question. Again, it's not about that anybody else can tell you when to stop grieving, but it is about saying, how long do I want to stay in pain? You know?
That getting over something, I guess, is such a mystery to people, you know, that, and please, if you are consoling someone, be careful of how you do that, what you say. I just in the not too distant past, witnessed someone who had lost a family pet. It was a dog. And somebody came over to see them and said, well, don't worry about it. There's a lot of dogs in the world. I mean, you can go out and get yourself another one and you can replace that one. That was the absolute worst thing. You know, it was like it trivialized the relationship that they'd had with this previous pet. And it was just like, well, they're interchangeable. They didn't really mean that much. You know, you can get another one, just maybe even better, you know, and one you'll love even more. But at the time, it's difficult for somebody to relate to that type of encouragement or, you know, trying to make them feel better. So be careful how you do it. So I went to some training as a Stephen minister in the church that I was in Chicago. And I we had a string of instructors that were really good. One of them was a marriage counselor who came in to talk about divorce. And they said, if you've got someone who has lost a relationship, could be through death or divorce, I think there's something going on that you might not have appreciated. When you have a spouse or significant other, and you have maybe children, and you have a vision of how your future is going to unfold. Then along comes life and changes that in some significant way, takes that person away or that animal, that pet away from you. And they said in divorce, if, and they ask us this question, if somebody said right now, how big is now for you? And you might just think about that yourself. If somebody says the present, for example, how big is the present? And their idea was that it was about 48 hours, 24 hours previous and 24 hours into the future. And you're kind of in the middle of that time period. What happens, they said, at the loss is the future entirely disappears. It destructures because that person or that animal, that pet that you had, is not going to be in it anymore. And so whatever you might have visualized it being, that's not going to happen. Mm. And so the future doesn't exist anymore. The past, a lot of people will retreat into the past and they say that can go back decades, you know, in somebody's mind. They have this elaborate memory system of all the things we did when that person or that pet was here, was with us, and then we get back to the present and realize they're gone, and then the future looks bleak because there's nothing there. And they said it will take some people years to reconstruct a future. So one of the things they advocated doing for the person is, if it's really recent, don't try to help them build a future right then, because it's too, they're stuck in this gloomy present dealing with this loss, and that's as much as they can manage. And somebody mm-hmm. will say, well, why don't we why don't we go out and have dinner tonight together and we can sit and talk? And they're thinking, dinner, I can't even think about lunch, and you're talking about this. So they're down to, sometimes the present is minutes long, you know, last minute, this minute, next minute, and that's as far as they can reach. They really can't imagine anything bigger than that. But very slowly, they'll put together a new future, minus whatever that loss was, and they'll begin to see ways that they can restructure their life and make it as satisfying as possible, and you know, and fun and meaningful to them given that they're going to still be dealing with that loss. So it may take a while to do that. But that's what getting over it to them, that's what getting over it means, is reconstructing a future, a positive, rewarding future without that person or that pet in it. And mm-hmm. and that's possible to do, but it takes some time to do that. Now, if you don't know that that's what you're even supposed to be working on after a month or 3 months or whatever, then it can take a lot longer because you don't even know that you're supposed to recreate a future for yourself. And so having somebody, a coach or somebody, even a good friend, help you do that. You can do things that honor that person in that future. You can do things that honor them. It may mean visiting a cemetery periodically, taking flowers, to the gravesite or whatever. So that can be part of that future. But also there need to be things that you pick up your life and lead it in a rewarding and satisfying way. Mm-hmm. So that recreating a future is really what's absolutely missing immediately for that person. That's why they're so shocked, because they don't, what's going to happen now? What am I going to do? Am I going to mm-hmm. live alone for the rest of my life? They don't know the answers to these questions.
Yeah, but being in the unknown is so unnerving and anxiety producing. I think that's really, really good point. Mm-hmm. And you're right. When you are with someone you love, or a pet, or you've got a career and a job, mm-hmm. and you've fleshed out what your future is going to look like based on what you have.
Yeah.
And so when one of those things gets taken away, now all your dreams and pictures that went with that scenario have to be redone, like you said. Yeah. And it is daunting. It is daunting because we get used to things. We get comfortable with things. And it's not laziness. It's just, like you said, it's shock.
Yeah.
Because total you shock. Have, to, yeah, you have to completely reconstruct what your life is going to be.
I listened to the stories some of these people, these veterans tell. They've got an organization that provides new homes that are built for handicapped people, and the stove's top goes down and the cabinets pull down and mm-hmm. there are automatic door openers. There are no thresholds so that a wheelchair can roll around. There are wide doors and all kind of things that they can do to accommodate this. And they just say, I just never thought that I was going to have to call one of my children to come and pick me up off the bathroom floor or cook my meals or things, you know. And there's this person sitting there, looks great from the waist up. And then all of a sudden they pan down and you realize the person has no legs at all. Mm-hmm. You know, they're even above the knee. And so I'm sure that a loss like that, how could you accommodate that? How could you ever create a new future? Here's me, and I had legs, and I was going to do this and that, and now here's me with no leg or no arms or, you know, whatever the loss may be. And yet these people just have this indomitable spirit. They come back and say, I'm going to overcome this. I'm going to learn how to make a life for myself. And some of them do. There was one woman who lost her legs as a veteran. She learned to ride on ice skates and play hockey. And she said, the first time they put me on this thing, I just fell over all the time. I couldn't balance at all. And it took me a long time. And now I could use my hockey stick to help prop me up and all. And I could get out there and shoot that puck along. And she said, it was just the most wonderful thing when I realized she was quite an athlete before. There's also a swimmer, I think, that has lost one leg. And she thought, well, that's the end of my swimming. And they said, no, not at all. You know, so they taught her how to wait for that. So the spirit of these people, once they realize it's not all over, you know, I don't have to just sit home in doom and gloom. I can get out and do things, and I can feel good about myself again, which they never thought they were going to be able to.
You know, and I'm reminded.
People who stand by them, those are the ones that get me too, because I know they are working hard to support this person.
They really are indeed.
They feel good.
Well, that's that. I'm reminded of the movie Forrest Gump, where Lieutenant Dan gets very bitter, and he's becomes an alcoholic. He's living in a rundown apartment in New York City, and he thinks his life is over and that nothing has any meaning anymore. Because as far as he knew, he was going to die on the battlefield, and Forrest went and saved him.
Saved him, yeah.
And now he had to create a whole future without legs, and he didn't die on the battlefield. Oh, shoot. No, and I'm not making light of losing legs. Oh, my God, not at all. But my point is, Lieutenant Dan learns that he has aspects to himself. Not only does he have arms that he's made very strong by working the wheelchair, but then he uses his brain to invest in Apple stock before the company went crazy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, the point is, you're not just your legs. You're not just the person you're with, you know, that you're not just the spouse in a relationship. You're not just the owner of a pet that you love. You're not just a daughter. You're not just a son. You're not just any one thing. And so when you focus on the one thing as if it's your whole life, then getting over it is very, very difficult. And I don't remember this model, but I had learned this at one point when I was, training to be a coach. And the whole idea that if you have all these different aspects of your life, then if you lose one aspect, you still have a life as long as these all have meaning for you. And you give them meaning and you pay attention to them. But when your whole life is focused on this one thing that you have, and, you know, people living for the marriage or living for the kids, if you live for the kids and they move out and go away when they grow up, you have no life. But if you are full while they're growing up and you still have a life after they leave, because you have things that pleasure you and that are part of you. And so it's really very important to notice and pay attention to the different aspects of what you actually have and what you actually can do and what your different abilities are. So that you don't fall into that trap of thinking that the only thing that matters is the one thing you lost.
Yeah. There are people, and I coach some of my clients that do this, that they become so one-dimensional. It's like they have one thing. And one of the things that I coach people, they play golf 5 days a week. And I just shudder to think what would happen if one day a doctor says, you can't play golf anymore. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of them will say, well, then my life's over, you know, if I can't do that. I've had very attractive clients that spend all of their time on their physical appearance. You know, they're constantly working. I said, you know, you're a multidimensional creature. You have an intellectual life. You have an emotional life. You have a social life. Yes, you have a body, and thank goodness, you know, you got your pretty right now, but when you're 60 or 70 years old and you're still got a lot of life left, your pretty's gone. At least it's changed in form from what you're used to right now. You better have something else that you can include as part of your being or who you are. Otherwise, you are going to be a very lonely person And it will have been avoidable. This could have been avoided by your recognizing that there's more to me than just my physical appearance. And they say, oh, yeah, you know, you're really right about that. And then they keep doing the same thing. They just do not, I don't know what it is, but they can't let go of that preoccupation with how they look. And that's the most important. It's their hair, their lips, their nose, eyebrows, or whatever it might be. And they're constantly, or they want to go in and have some work done on it, you know, to enhance that. And they spend all of their money and time obsessing over it. And I just feel sorry for one-dimensional people, because life has a way, it seems, the very thing that you become one-dimensional about is the thing that will come along and say, whoop, can't do that anymore. You've got to think about it.
How true.
Yeah, it's just amazing. Singers lose their voice, you know, and athletes lose some their vision or whatever, and, you know, it goes bad. So just be careful and work on yourself and make sure you exploit all of the wonderful gifts that you have. Develop in many different areas, because you never know when something's going to block one of them from any further development, and you need something to fall back on and know that there's a lot more things that I can be or that I can do than what I, you know, than this one thing that I can't anymore.
Exactly. Exactly. Very helpful. Yeah. Very important. Well, Dr. Art, we are nearing the end of our show, and it's hard to believe that the two of us can talk that much.
Just that's it. I have one other thing that I like to put in while there's a little bit of time left.
Okay.
Is that okay?
Yes.
I had a client one time, and I don't know how in the world these words ever got out of my mouth, but after about an hour with this client, I said, you know, I hate to even say this to you, you're the most negative person I have ever met in my entire life. And she said, oh, yes, I'm very proud of that. I work at it. And I said, what? What do you mean? She said, well, what I really treasure is being right. That's what makes me feel good, is I'm right. And so what I've noticed, that all these things people plan, they don't usually work out the way they thought they were going to. And so, you know, and they get all upset and say, well, it didn't work. And I thought this was going to happen. I thought that was going to happen. It didn't. And I feel like I could have predicted that. And that makes me right. And so almost everything and all plans seem to, you know, not go according to plan. And that makes me right about it. And that makes me feel good. So that's my negativity paying off. And here's the good thing about it. If I'm wrong, that means everything worked out perfectly. And I can feel good about that too. So you said it's a win-win, you know, negativity is a win-win.
Oh my gosh. Said,
you're the most articulate defender of negativity that I've ever run across in my life. So if being right is really important to you, just be careful about that being your claim to fame.
For sure. That's hysterical.
Yeah.
Well, I wanted to announce what we're having next week, because we have a special guest. Mm-hmm. And just let me have a moment here. So we will be talking to Daniel J. Hahneman. I actually know Daniel. He's an amazing individual. He is the CEO and founder of Your Sacred Purpose, about discovering and embracing your unique gifts and help for highly sensitive people. So if you have always had a feeling you don't fit in, if you have what many consider unusual abilities, if you have a soft heart in a harsh world and want to create success through a more gentle approach to life, come listen to Dan. He teaches highly sensitive people exactly how to thrive. And
Great.
He's just a really cool human being. Just really cool. So,
and for those of you who tuned in to find out what your life purpose was, we'll get in touch with our guest and try to reschedule, find out what happened. And we apologize for that, but, you know, things happen. So
stuff happens. I'm hoping everything's all right. He's a professional speaker. He always shows up. So this must be very unusual.
Must be very, very difficult. Yeah.
But what I do want to say is thank you again to our subscribers.
Right.
If you enjoyed the show, we hope you will consider becoming a subscriber. And if you'd like Dr. Art's handout, you can email us. And Thomas, if you'd put our email on the screen, that would be great. And if you're watching, it's contactnrshow@gmail.com. If you're just here on audio, that's the word contact, N as in Nancy, R as in Rachel, show@gmail.com. And you'll get that five-pointed star time management handout that Dr. Art spoke about in his tip of the week.
Good.
Yeah. So we will see you next week with Daniel Hahnemann as our guest. And thank you so much for tuning into another
Thanks
new
very
reality.
Much for being with us. Enjoy
yes.
it.
Hope you got benefit. Thanks for joining us. If you've enjoyed this show, please consider being a supporter. You can find that on our show page. Tune in every Friday night at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, and find us on Facebook at facebook.com/New Reality Show for announcements of upcoming topics and exciting guest interviews. Bye for now.